Hello, everybody. Welcome back into your latest episode of Locked On Colts, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today's our host, Evan Sutter, and my very special guest to today's show, Kevin Bowen of Kevin's Corner, 107.5 The Fan, 1070 The Fan. Kevin, how are you doing today?
Doing well, Evan. How are you doing, man?
Doing good, and I'm really glad to get you on, Kevin. I know it's been almost a week since the NFL draft concluded here, but what a wild week it was. We started off with a lot of rumors about Malik Hooker, Quincy Wilson. We saw Wilson that you get traded. And we saw on day two of the draft here, we thought maybe they'd trade for Jordan Love. Doesn't happen. Go get Michael Pittman and Jonathan Taylor, though, in round two. Before we dive into all this, what happened the last week or so, Kevin, what was your overall thoughts on what the Colts did this week?
Yeah, you know, I think when you and I talked maybe early April or maybe it was even – yeah, I think it was just before the draft now that I think about it. You know, I'd mentioned kind of an offensive focus to this draft. And I know the positional value sometimes is – you know, something that no general manager ever wants to admit, you know, plays into draft picks, but it inevitably does. And there is kind of a best player available at positions of need. I think, you know, degree to how these GMs approach various drafts. And I think we've seen that now from Chris Ballard here. You know, he overhauled the defense those first 3 years and spent so many premium picks on that side of the ball. And then this past, you know, draft last week, you know, the offensive focus of the skill positions early on, you know, then coming back and taking Jacob Eason and Danny Pintner and to spend, you know, four of your first five picks on offense after, you know, again, committing more resources to the defense and free agency as well. I thought that was a really wise move to get more explosive at the skill positions, get two guys that I think are really day one ready. You know, I think when you look at this entire draft, you can make the argument Michael Pittman and Jonathan Taylor are two of the more day one ready guys. And of course, both of those guys, you know, get you more talented, get you more explosive at the skill positions, which is absolutely vital. You know, Phillip Rivers, I don't think had enough talent by any means, you know, with how that current skill group looked leading into the draft. And I think you at least took some steps in the right direction. And then obviously we'll help out long-term as well, you know, whoever the quarterback is after Rivers.
I think it's what's really interesting, Kevin, is with getting Taylor and Pittman on board. You have Pittman at 34, Taylor moving up ahead of Jacksonville, getting at 41 there. I don't want to put too much high expectations on Pittman and Taylor here, but it feels like those first two picks kind of remind me of 2012 when they went and got Andrew Luck and T.Y. Hilton. And just, I feel like those two guys are going to be such a big boost to this offense right away.
Well, yeah, I mean, nothing is going to compare to the quarterback position and the number one overall pick, but yeah, I mean, from a future number one wideout and a probably a current, maybe even a future number one running back, Michael Pittman and Jonathan Taylor, you know, need to get to that level. And the Colts, I mean, they have not shied away from stating their expectations on a guy like Pittman. And I do think there's a lot of polish to him. You know, I had a lot of debate from people, you know, okay, who do you like in that early second round? You know, the grouping of Michael Pittman and Chase Claypool and Denzel Mims and T. Higgins. And I, you know, I kind of settled on Pittman because I felt like there was some day one readiness there. And I felt like people kind of underestimated some of his athleticism and kind of the short area quickness that he still brings to that position. I don't think he's your typical USC pretty boy. I think there's a bit of dirtiness to him from his special teams background, you know, the son of an NFL running back. You know, he was primarily a defensive player in high school as well. So I think all of those reasons kind of help him, you know, play the position with the right mentality and play to his size. You know, too many times I don't think we see receivers play to their size, especially in the bigger body guys. And then Taylor, I mean, when you take a running back at 41 overall, let alone a player that has the pedigree of Jonathan Taylor, you expect him to be a perennial 1,000-yard rusher. That might be high praise, but you know, that's what Taylor did in college. I mean, the numbers are absolutely video game-like to the, you know, nth degree of what Jonathan Taylor did at Wisconsin. And some people sit here and say, okay, my concern is Wisconsin running backs don't pan out in the NFL, or at least don't, you know, live up to the college production that they put up. Fair, certainly. I think what separates Taylor is his kind of explosive nature in that, you know, this is a guy that runs 4.3 and weighs 226 pounds. I mean, Melvin Gordon isn't running 4.3. Monte Ball isn't running 4.3. You know, I think all of those reasons play into the fact of, okay, they think and they believe that this guy was worthy of the 41st overall pick, even though he didn't have kind of the third down element, which I think a lot of people feel like, you know, in today's NFL, you know, higher running back picks need to have that. And then, of course, some of the fumbling things. But Tom Rathman has been a guy that is, from a position coach, has cleaned that up. So, but again, I think from a day one impact, a jolt to your offense, week one, fourth quarter, Jonathan Taylor, Michael Pittman need to be touching the ball a whole lot.
Looking at Pittman for a second here, Kevin, when you see his body type 6'4", 223, hit on it on the last podcast with you, just about it seemed obvious they're going after a big body type when you get Philip Rivers on board here. But you, I imagine you watched the With the Next Pick series yesterday as well, where Frank Reich was gushing over Michael Pittman, as were the rest of the staff on there for their scouting department. It feels like to me that, especially for a quarterback like Philip Rivers, he's had the Mike Williams, the Tyrell Williams, the Malcolm Floyds, Vincent Jacksons. It seems like he's set up well to have the opportunity to have Philip Rivers. He's, instead of it's going to be Mike Williams, Malcolm Floyds, be him tossing 40-yard chuck-ups to a guy, Michael Pittman, instead.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know if we touched on it a couple weeks ago, but it's certainly something I've harped on throughout the offseason of the need to get a big body wide out. And I thought that was an emphasis even before you signed Rivers. And then when you did sign him, that even, you know, takes on a bigger, bigger priority. And Frank Reich was very adamant. I mean, you watched it and you just mentioned it, you know, just what he wanted to seek out. You know, there was a great wide out class here in 2020. There was a lot of flavor of wide outs. I know the Colts were big fans of KJ Hamler as well. And maybe that would have been a pick, you know, had you done something differently early in the second round. But when you look at the big body nature to Pittman's game, it does follow, you know, some of the San Diego LA Charger wideouts that Philip Rivers has grown accustomed to throwing to. And I don't think it's just like a 2-year thing of like, oh, you drafted Michael Pittman to help out Philip Rivers. No, you also help out, you know, whoever that future quarterback is. For people that are like, oh, big body, you know, wideout, such a waste. I think trying to, again, diversify that wideout room is what you're going for. And I think Pittman's body type and how he plays the wideout position, it complements what you have in T.Y. Hilton and Paris Campbell. You know, in a different way, Pittman's going to give you a bit of yard after catch element. Is it a huge part of his game? No. But when you watch him, he finishes plays. He uses that 6'4 body to fall forward, to stretch out, do things like that. And that's not something the Colts have gotten a whole lot of out of their wideout crew in recent seasons. So I thought that was a huge factor. I mean, if you look at Rivers' resume, you know, Frank Reich mentioned last night, maybe it was Chris Ballard, the Vincent Jackson reference for sure. Well, you also have, you know, guys that, what, Malcolm Floyd, you know, you mentioned some of the recent ones, and Mike Williams, and, you know, even Keenan Allen, 6'2", and 220 pounds, and Tyrell Williams. And I mean, there has been a lot of guys in Rivers' career, especially over the last decade, that he's relied on to throw up those kind of 50-50 balls. And if you watch the big plays for the Chargers last season down the field, it wasn't so much of like, you know, crazy separation created and Rivers just throwing a dime right into the breadbasket. It's kind of throw up a guy or throw the ball to a guy, and he might not be very open, but he's going to come down with it. And that's, I think, something that at least Pittman can give you a different element that you thought maybe Devin Funchess could have given you last year.
Hitting on Jonathan Taylor for a second as well, Kevin, does this move, and especially trading up in front of Jacksonville, you give up capital, the fifth round pick, to go up and get him. You got it back in the trade back for Julian Blackman 10 spots later, but I think it's interesting to me they go up and get Jonathan Taylor, 41 overall. Marlon Mack's entering the final year of his contract. Is it fair to say that Marlon Mack might be on his way after this year, Kevin?
Yeah, I think it is fair to say. You know, I know some people are like, well, he's going to have, you know, a dialed back role, and running backs don't get a whole lot of money on the open market. But, you know, the Colts cap situation is going to continue to get a little tighter as you move forward. And then also, you know, Marlon Mack probably wants to become somewhat of a bell cow somewhere else. I mean, Marlon Mack carried the ball a whole lot last season when he was healthy. It's not like the Colts spelled him too much. Well, I go back to what I said about Taylor. You don't draft a guy 41st overall to have him in any sort of running back by committee approach. No, to achieve what the 41st pick means, you know he's not playing for you for 10 or 12 years. That's just how running backs are. But he's going to have to be a 20-ish, north of 20 carry guy for you for whatever, a handful of seasons, if not more. So I feel bad for Marlon Mack, to be honest with you. Something I talked about on my podcast over the weekend. You know, he's a guy that has produced at a really nice level for a fourth-round pick. And Has gotten healthier since that rookie season and learned under Frank Gore, ran for 1,000 yards last year. I mean, the Colts are 1-7 without Marlon Mack in the lineup. So he clearly means something to this football team. But I think when you get to next offseason, teams might view him as a guy that's even more attractive if he does have a dial back role, because they're going to say, okay, you're saving a little bit of tread on him. And he's only, 24 years old, maybe 25 come next free agency. I just think some team will give him more of that lead back opportunity than he's going to get here in Indianapolis.
Yeah, totally agree with you there. I think Taylor is setting up for maybe Marlon Mack to be on his way after this year. But when you look at Taylor's fit in this offense, Kevin, behind Quentin Nelson, the hog mollies up front there for the Colts, it seems like this is just a perfect fit. And maybe this is something I haven't heard Bauer talk about as much yet so far this year. But I wonder if him seeing Tennessee and San Francisco doing so well in the playoffs and the 49ers going to the Super Bowl itself, the power run game that both those teams have. You have Jonathan Taylor, maybe sort of like a Derrick Henry type there. He doesn't go down first contact. He's trying to build a bully up front like Tennessee and San Francisco did. And I think it's really interesting going up to get Taylor, because it kind of fits that philosophy.
Yeah, I mean, it's taking run the damn ball, and it's even adding more to it. It's something that, some fans, when I initially said this earlier in the offseason, were a little taken aback by it, but it is true, and there's a lot of evidence to back it up. The Colts were a really good running team last year. They were not an elite running team. An elite running team is what Tennessee did in the playoffs. Top 10 rushing defenses in Baltimore and New England, and Tennessee just bullies the hell out of them. And you look at the Colts, when they played top 10 rushing defenses last year, they got bullied. They couldn't run the ball at all against, Tampa Bay and New Orleans and Oakland. I think those were the three top 10 rushing defenses that they played. So if you're going to be all about this mantra and you're going to want to produce and against the league's best run defenses and, eventually produce in the month of January, and this goes back to, honestly, how the Colts played in Kansas City back in 2018 in the game at Arrowhead in the divisional round of the playoffs, and you couldn't run it at all. You have got to be able to establish your bread and butter. And I think that's what this pick also means a little bit of. I thought there were times last season when you got behind the chains, with some of those negative runs or, maybe a holding penalty, and all of a sudden you were just shot. There's no way that your offense is going to be able to get out of that. So I think they look at Taylor. When you watch Taylor, I see, and this, I mean, honestly, part of this is because he ran behind such a great offensive line. He doesn't have to dodge many people in the backfield, and that'll be something that'll be a little bit new for him in the NFL, just because defenses are better and you don't have such a just huge gap between your offensive line at Wisconsin. But when he gets a little bit of space, 3, 4, 5 yards into a run, that guy just takes off. And he just has a different gear to him that can turn, again, a run that might be 6, 7, 8 yards into 50 or 60 yards. And for any NFL team, big plays are such a huge element, and the Colts didn't have enough of them last year.
Kevin, doesn't it feel inevitable, honestly, that we're going to see one game this year where Marlon Mack and Jonathan Taylor go for like 250, 300 rushing yards? We saw the Colts defense in the past, like the Jaguars back in the day, Maurice Jones-Drew, they would run all over teams. But I feel like it's inevitable that we're going to have at least one game this year where Philip Rivers maybe throws the ball 10, 15 times and they just run it down someone's throat.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, I feel like you even had a little bit of that maybe last year or the year before that, where there were some games where you look at Andrew Luck's stat line afterwards and you'd be like, what in the world? The Colts won and Andrew Luck didn't throw for more than 180 passing yards. And again, it's very foreign. Honestly, it's pretty foreign to Rivers, considering the Chargers have not had a very good rushing attack of recent years either. I do think that is going to be a huge part of them wanting to play from ahead. And obviously every team wants to play from ahead. But the Colts, I think, oftentimes found themselves behind the eight ball way too often last season and just weren't an offense built to be coming back. And if you look at, probably the biggest negative on Rivers last year was how poorly he played in the fourth quarter. Now, oftentimes it was, my team is down, I've got to do everything I can to try and get my team back into the game. So if you can be a better defense, establish a lead early, and have a running game that can produce for you consistently throughout a football game over the course of 60 minutes and not just be a, hey, great success in the second half when, you're down by 10 points and you're trying to run it to get back into it and the opposing defense is, playing prevent, if you will. But I think that'll be a big key for this offense.
Before we dive in, Kevin, to your overall thoughts on how much the Colts improved this offseason, just a few more picks I want to go over with you. And the next one on the list, Julian Blackman, their third-round pick. They moved back 10 spots and still got their guy. At 85 overall, recouped that fifth-round pick and go for Jonathan Taylor. What I found really interesting from the With the Next Pick video last night was Chris Ballard saying, and I quote, "I think this guy's a legitimate free safety in the league." And they're also talking about how good of a tackler he was, how good of a ball hawk he was. It seems like to me, and they're kind of dragging their feet a little bit, Kevin, as far as the fifth-year option goes, Malik Hooker. We heard about the trade rumors last week, too. If you remember last year, Ryan Kelly, they decided right away after the draft on that Saturday to pick up his option. It surprised me with also Ballard saying this about Julian Blackman being a good free safety in the league. Or maybe they're dropping breadcrumbs a little bit to us, Kevin, about like maybe Malik Hooker's long-term future ended.
Yeah, I'll be, you know, very curious to see how the next 72 hours, I guess, play out for when the Hooker option is due. You know, when you look at Blackman, I don't think he's like the exact same skill set by any means of Hooker as that rangy free safety. But, you know, or I should say kind of more of a rangy center field guy. But, you know, Ballard said what he said, certainly, and that's the only thing that matters. And the Colts, I think, also look at him and think that there's more to his game than just being a rangy free safety. Now, having said that, what is going to be interesting to me is just how much confidence do you really have in Julian Blackman, because you might not see him on the field very much here in 2019. I mean, maybe he plays, what, 10 games, 8 games, something like that, depending on how he recovers from that December ACL injury. But we know full well how long it took Malik Hooker to get back looking like his normal self. So I think that is a question that you have. If for some reason you don't pick up this fifth-year option, which honestly – I don't think it would be a wise move. I think Hooker is very affordable and is still young and still gives you a part of your defense that you need. And that would allow me to bring Blackman along a little bit slower, and also would indicate that that you can, you know, use him in a variety of roles. And then when Hooker's contract does come up after 2021, if you exercise that option, then you make more of a long-term decision at safety. That's the route that I would take there, because, again, if you don't pick up this fifth-year option and he plays in a contract year, Malik Hooker is in a contract year for 2020, and Julian Blackman plays whatever, let's say he plays half the season, 8 games for you, you're going off of 8 games off of torn ACL that you've got to then decide whether or not you're going to, you know, make him the long-term safety next to Kari Willis, or if you're going to try and bring back Malik Hooker, who already will probably not be very happy with you that you waited as long as you did and as of right now haven't picked up that fifth-year rookie option. So I'll be really, really curious to see how this plays out. As much as I sit here and say, like, I didn't love, you know, trading back 10 spots and taking a redshirt guy and all of that, I definitely see where Blackman can get on the field and have a very big impact for you, even if he's not, and, you know, an every down starter, if Malik Hooker and Kari Willis are your safeties of the future. But I thought, you know, not getting an offensive tackle is probably my biggest positional gripe coming out of this draft.
Really intriguing what the Colts did at the start of day 3, Kevin, especially after Chris Ballard's comments after night 2, talking about how he wasn't going to force it. And it didn't really force this pick. It was at 122 overall. It took Jacob Eason, who was supposed to be a round 2, round 3 prospect at Washington, slips to 122 overall in the middle of the fourth round there. What was your thoughts on that pick? Because that really threw me off guard when I saw that on the ticker there, Jacob Eason, Washington quarterback to the Colts. Because, I mean, you talked about this on your podcast as well, Kevin. I totally agree with you on this, that the Colts had to take at least one shot at the dartboard here. And if you look at traits itself, Jacob Eason's probably the best traits guy outside maybe Jordan Love and the other top guys in this draft class. If you were going to trade up for Love, I think going Eason around 4 for $4 million over 4 years just makes too much sense not to pass.
Yeah, and I wasn't as stunned by it as I think maybe some people were, because we have to remember, I mean, the Colts, when it comes to quarterback, it's a unique position. It is a very unique position, and you're going to take you're going to be very, very calculated in what you say publicly about that position, because you know how precious that means to every team around the NFL. Obviously, people were surprised that Green Bay took Love. People were surprised that Philadelphia took Jalen Hurts. I mean, there are surprises everywhere at that position. So again, I think the Colts are really wise to spend that pick on Eason. I think he walks into a great learning situation, a great situation to be a sponge, you know, under Rivers and obviously under Frank Reich as well. But the one concern that I would have, and I guess it's similar a bit to Julian Blackman, but it's even much, much bigger at the quarterback position, is just when do you see Jacob Eason in game settings? Phillip Rivers obviously is not coming off the field, and the Colts are in this heavy win now focus, which I totally get, totally understand. But, Jacob Eason, let's say he sits for 2 years. Phillip Rivers plays 2 years, Eason sits for 2 years. You're going to get to 2022, and Jacob Eason will have played one season of football since 2016. I mean, that is quite a long time, and it was only one college season. So what do you have in him? Are you comfortable just handing him those keys? I think those are all, again, difficult, well down the road decisions that the Colts are going to have to make one day. And who knows, maybe they'll fall in love with a quarterback next year of a Justin Fields or a Trey Lance or somebody like that and go ahead and try to mortgage their draft and move up for him. But I think from a trait standpoint at pick 122, Eason, James Morgan. I think Morgan went a couple picks later, if I'm not mistaken. I think Eason made a whole lot of sense to me.
Real quickly, Kevin, just I imagine you've watched a few Eason tape or a few Eason highlights and games since that pick happened, or maybe even beforehand. Just what stood out to you most when you watched Eason?
Obviously, the arm. I mean, I've said this before. When you watch him, when you watch any sort of highlight film, or honestly any sort of game film on him, he just fits balls into areas down the field that I don't see a lot of college quarterbacks being able to do. I thought Frank Reich described it really well too, is he has a wide variety of kind of arm talent, some touch, some different arm angles, things that are really key to handling pressure. And I know that is a big element to his game that he needs to work on. But that is by far the one thing that you notice when he has a clean pocket to operate. I mean, he can really put the ball into some impressive windows. I even remember watching him at the combine, and he was, just before Jake Fromm did, and just the different arm talents that you saw in those two guys. And it came all back to those developmental traits of, okay, what do you think? And clearly NFL teams were not that obsessed with Jake Fromm. I mean, honestly, they weren't obsessed with Jacob Eason for how long he waited, but Eason went much higher than Fromm because they feel like it's easier to develop, maybe the footwork that needs to be cleaned up, or helping them, read progressions and do things in those offense or in this offense. And the Colts did a whole lot of homework from a character standpoint. I mean, to send Ed Dodds and Brian Decker, out to Seattle, you're not messing around. And clearly they wanted to see, who this guy was about. Chris Strausser on their offensive line, being on that Washington staff, I mean, that can help you out as well. They have some connections, with Chris Peterson in that previous regime. So I think all of those, elements were key. But yeah, I mean, certainly from a film tape standpoint, you immediately notice the arm.
When you add in the Colts draft picks, Kevin, they also go through the offseason additions like Phillip Rivers, Jonathan Taylor, Michael Pittman, Trey Burton, DeForest Buckner, Sheldon Day, Xavier Rhodes, and other picks and signings. How much did this Colts team improve from the 2019 season heading into 2020? Because I feel like I've heard people like Daniel Jeremiah talk about this Colts team, Louis Riddick. They are very bullish now on this Colts team heading into 2020.
Yeah, I think without a doubt, it's an improved football team. The Colts were 7-9 last year, and while there are certainly some games that could have gone their way that didn't, there were also a few games that did go their way that easily could have gone the other way. So I thought 7-9 was pretty fair, honestly, for what their final record was. But I thought quarterback play needed to improve by at least a win or two. And I think if you can protect Rivers, that can happen. And I think on the defensive side of the ball, you've improved probably by at least a win over there. I know the over-under, I think from what I've seen so far in Vegas, is like 8.5 or 9. I think it's a team capable of winning double-digit games. I know that it is probably a harder schedule on paper. Last year's schedule looked, pretty hard at in April when it came out, but it ended up not being very hard compared to the rest of the AFC South and in general in the NFL. Right now, when you look at that schedule, I think there are a few more roadblocks on it, and we'll see how all that plays out. But I would look at the Colts and I'd look at Tennessee and think, man, those are probably the two favorites in the AFC South. I thought Tennessee had a solid draft and had a decent offseason. You know, losing Drell Casey is notable, but they've had some acquisitions as well that I think have helped them out. Houston, you can never, you know, count them out too much just because they do have the best quarterback in the division, and they have won the division, you know, four out of 5 years. But, you know, how they, you know, deal with no DeAndre Hopkins will be something to watch. But, yeah, I think the Colts are an improved football team, and they need to get back into the month of January, and I think they're capable of getting back in the month of January.
I feel like every playoff team now in the AFC for the next decade or so has to ask themselves this question, Kevin, especially heading into this season. Do you feel confident this Colts team could go into, let's say, Baltimore or Kansas City in late January now, the roster they have, and go in there and win?
I think that's premature. No, I can't say that right now. I think Kansas City and Baltimore have both really just been very stable with their off seasons, and then brought in, I mean, definitely Baltimore. I thought Baltimore had a really good draft, and Calais Campbell was a good signing as well. So, you know, I'm not ready to say this is a team that, you know, can late January go on the road and win a playoff game. But if you're going to make me pick two favorites, I'd probably pick Kansas City and Baltimore. And then I think really everyone else is in some sort of a group. You know, when you talk about Buffalo, or what does Pittsburgh look like if Ben is healthy, you know, Tennessee and Indianapolis right there. You know, what do the Chargers look like? Do they really think Tyrod Taylor is an upgrade over running it back with Phillip Rivers? I'll be really curious to watch that play out as well. So I think they are, you know, those teams are in a second tier. But right now, you know, if you're going to make me pick, you know, AFC title matchup, I'd probably pick Kansas City and Baltimore, and then have those other teams kind of knocking on the door.
Kevin, always enjoy talking to you, man. You can follow him on Twitter at KBowen1070, and please go subscribe to his podcast as well, Kevin's Corner. Always listening to that. So, Kevin, appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Evan. Enjoy it as always.